Hello, everybody. It's him and me again. That's James McLean. I'm Christian Collier, as you can see, because our little names are at the bottom, possibly. Or maybe that's just for our use. I'm not sure.
Who knows?
So we're here, as you can probably gather from the title, to talk about recent events in Doctor Who and this whole missing episodes thing and the concerns over AI upscaling in recent releases of classic episodes of Doctor Who, and the Jane Tranter thing as well, with Rob Sherman and Doctor Who's status and its public debate. Before we get onto that, though, if you are in our Patreon, you may know, but if you're in our Patreon, then you know this. If you don't, subscribe to us through the Patreon and get the podcast early and ad-free and with extra material, then you will not know that we have a thing called the Casturbis Archive, which is a collection of things I'm adding to Patreon that used to be part of Casturbis, or they featured on Casturbis in the old days, and I think they're worth keeping hold of. So, for example, I uncovered a collection of exclusive images from Voyage of the Damned, which the BBC sent us in 2006, late 2006, which I'd completely forgotten about. I don't even know if they were on the website for any particular length of time. So they've gone into the archive. There's a podcast, a short interview that I did when James was struggling to talk to Philip Hinchcliffe at the VoipCon event many years ago. I was interviewing Pip Madeley, this social media Doctor Who and classic TV sort of fan who used to make amusing GIFs and clips of stuff. And he's not on Twitter anymore, but he is on, I think he's on Blue Sky. So I had a chat with him, which went missing for ages, and then I found it, and then I lost it, and then I found it again, and then I lost it, and this happened a few times. Now it is in the Patreon, so you can have a look at it there. And so there's loads of stuff being added that I think are worth keeping from the old website. And so if you subscribe to the Patreon, you not only get the podcast early, you not only you also get access to those, and there's other stuff that's coming along down the line which is going to take a lot of work to get to, but that we're going to be adding as well. So that's over.
I'm really pleased to hear you've done that, because I think as we get older as well, and it's like different stages of internet life, isn't it? Like when we started we literally started the internet life as it's known as it is now, you know, this openly public network of stuff. It was really exciting to see stuff which sort of physical stuff which was now lost, not necessarily lost but not easily accessible, suddenly being compiled from all these various different random sources. And then you get to sort of stage where that stuff and the stuff that accumulates in that space gets lost in the digital age. And now you've got almost like that same thing again, where you're recompiling not the sort of physical stuff, but the digital stuff, which has got lost within the digital ether. So to unlock that, I think is a kind of, I really like that, because we're seeing it now, aren't we? We see how much, I mean, if we're just kind and say like 25, okay, let's be really kind, 30 years of public internet, that's a lot of time and a lot of stuff, global stuff, and so much of it just vanishes now. You know, and is, you know, in a weird way we realize, we always sort of think, well, digital stuff will immortalize analog stuff, but in this problem is the digital stuff can't even immortalize digital stuff, it just gets lost. And so get that stuff back and putting it up there for people who are really interested in sort of delving into some of that material, I think that's great, especially stuff like the Voyage of the Damned. I think material that kind of circulated around then, limited material, getting to see that stuff historically is really cool.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with you as well. And we used to have a forum as well, which I think we closed around 20, I don't know when we closed it. But there's loads of stuff in there, and I have a backup of it. In fact, there's actually two or three forums. I have backups of those, which I intend to reinvigorate at some point, and then mine for useful information, because there's loads of stuff in those forums that didn't go on the main website.
But again, that is really interesting and important stuff, because, you know, the cultural memory sort of doesn't erase, it sort of modifies itself, doesn't it? So, for instance, you know, you forget now that, say, in 2002, that everyone piled on the McCoy era, that it was rubbish and terrible, you know, and that's how it was. And now it's seen as, you know, an actual sparkle, in the same way that, as you say, if you go into newspaper archives or magazine archives, reactions to things like The Empire Strikes Back weren't all great. Stuff like Tom Baker being, except wasn't all great. So we lose all those moments of where stuff has changed.
Yeah.
And if you can, though, I think forums is a kind of a lost space for that, because you actually really get to see what people's initial reaction to these things were. So I think if you've got opportunities to sort of revitalize that again, and if people are interested and want to have a little bit of an accessy and looky, kudos to you.
Well, thank you very much, James. So, as I was saying, in addition to the yearly podcast, you can get access to that through Patreon. Now, if you're watching this on Patreon, hello, you're already know this, and you've had access to that for a while. So share, spread the word. And while I was talking about sharing and spreading the word, would be really, really great if you could leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, please, everybody, because we haven't had any reviews in ages, and the more reviews you get, then the more listeners we can get, and, you know, it raises attention, algorithms and all that sort of thing, and that helps us. Also, just one last thing before we do get on with stuff, everything that goes out on Patreon, audio-wise, you can actually get through Spotify as well now. You'll find the link within your profile on Patreon, and that, you know, if you use Spotify as your main podcast player, that could be quite advantageous. It means you don't have to use the Patreon app. So, this Jane Tranter and Rob Sherman thing, actually, I think we need to kick off with. Rob Sherman said a few things in an interview that was published in Dot 2 magazine, I believe, and I don't think any of it was particularly, you know, controversial or any. I mean, he's basically stating the situation of Doctor Who as he sees it, and then, although surprisingly, it was kind of published in DWM, which is of course kind of the official Doctor Who magazine, so it has to, you know, maintain. I mean, you know, they have to maintain a particular set of you know, standards, etc. I do wonder if maybe they just published it because A, they don't have much to publish, or more likely B, they could do the publicity.
I think it's possibly. I think it's also, it's for Doctor Who magazine, it's a credible name which people will know who, yeah, read the magazine, giving opinions in a space where people are interested in that question. Invariably, if you're buying that magazine, you are interested in whether this thing that you are buying is going to ever have any new iterations. And there's obviously a lot of nervousness around that. And I think what is interesting is, you know, like the Radio Times picking it up, and then the Radio Times doing a counter article to that article a week later as well. And then, as we've seen, as we're going to talk about, BBC Wales doing an interview with Jane Tranter about this as well, specifically about, really, about what Rob said. So it's kind of got legs. I think it's got legs because it is something which a lot of people are interested in the show are, you know, worried about, either positively or negatively.
Yeah.
If that's right.
So in an interview with Doctor Who magazine, Radio Times reported, Sherman shared information about his relationship with the show and said, I go through phases. I have a real push-pull thing with the show. At the moment, I'm in a pull phase. It's weird because the show is probably as dead as we've ever known it. After 1989, he continued, we had for years a current Doctor. Now, everything that is ever going to be produced in Doctor Who terms is going to feel retrogressive, at least with the new adventures and then the BBC books. You thought, it's the current Doctor, McCoy or McCann. No one's going to start writing Doctor Who books with a Billy Piper Doctor because no one knows what that means. In a funny way, the closing moments of the reality war seem to put a full stop on things. We didn't have that before. I'm not giving it an awful lot of thought in that respect, but I can totally see where he's coming from with that. Because it's just a thing.
Yeah, but I get what he means. And where he positions it historically is, you know, fair dinkum, mate, I get that. But you could say, like, I remember the feelings after the McGann movie. Uh-huh. And we didn't know where that was going. And I remember the Radio Times doing a few news strips, and then obviously the books. And that was a weird space because no one really knew who the Gantogter was yet, because they'd had like effectively 60 minutes of him since his regeneration.
If that.
Not a great amount of time to get a real, if that, to get a feeling of who this person is. So I remember reading those McGann books and comic strips and news strips, feeling like these are almost like end world interpretations, nth world stuff, because we didn't know what he'd be like. And to a weird way, you know, do we know what he's like? I suppose we do. You know, do we sort of go by the official canon and go Knight of the Doctor and Power of the Doctor, was it her last one, where he reappears again briefly in her dreamscape? Are those just what we know, or do we take the BBC, the Big Finish line? We don't know. But the point being is that was a space for me, which is a bit like where we are with Billy Piper now. We don't really know where the show's going. Yeah, this is more of a cliffhanger than what we got with McGann. But with McGann, we didn't really know what that would entail. And we didn't know whether it would ever come back. We didn't know if these like news strips or iterations were it. That was going to be what we would have. And is that is that Paul McGann? Or is that just interpretation? So I think I get what Robert means. I think that's a nice idea of talking about that moment after McCoy, because for the fandom, and I think this is what maybe he's sort of addressing in a sort of slightly grumpy way, is that back end was actually a fountain of excitement and exploration of what Doctor Who, and to some degree what the Cartmel McCoy Doctor meant, and where we could take that. And that was kind of where it propelled it. While here, you've got a kind of like a bit of a full stop, where you don't have that opportunity to sort of go, well, what's after Gatwell? Well, we can't. So do we have to step back, or do we have to walk over? And I get that. But I think the problem is here is that I suppose this is what previous articles after it have sort of suggested, is that it's an assumption this is a stopping point. Well, with McCoy, we knew it was a resting point. It was a point where they were like, we're going to rest the show for a bit. That's not where we are now. We're just in a bit of an ether space where we don't know where it's going to carry on. If Disney doesn't pick it up and BBC does not pick it up, then I think if we then go back and take his point and put it there, I think it's far more salient. I think, it does cause problems, doesn't it? It does cause problems for like, how do we explore beyond it? I'm sure we've had things like this in the past with other shows. I'm trying to think of what ones they are, where you sort of have, I remember with video games, like Final Fantasy VII, when that ends, the video game ends on a cliffhanger. Well, cliffhanger is an open-ended ending, and the amount of fandoms which were trying to explore that, and then there was Urguise, which was a fighting game, and people were looking at that because the two characters from the video game Final Fantasy VII were in it. Did that give us any hints of what happened after? And in a weird way, sometimes it can generate some sort of interest when an ending is kind of open and doesn't necessarily mean that the thing comes back, but sometimes it actually gives the franchise a cultural memory because it ends on a weird space. But I don't know. How do you feel about this, Christian Corley?
My feelings are that, I don't know. I've read things that suggest that, like, one day it was just an open-ended regeneration, and then the next day suddenly Billy Piper was there as almost a snap decision for, you know, publicity, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know. I think maybe an open-ended thing would have been better, just to, if it's not going to come back immediately, then that gives people plenty of opportunity to do what they want to do, and along the lines of what you just discussed there. Whereas with an actual face attached to it, then maybe that limits things, and maybe it also feels as well, there was like this, I don't know if this was an actual statement, but there was like this implication that it kind of tops and tails the 21st century Doctor Who, which that actually, to me, that sounds quite final. Tailing something, you know, you're just like having a book ending it, I beg your pardon. If something has bookends, then that means it has a beginning and an end, and that feels like an end, whether it's an end that actually makes sense or not. is another matter entirely. So I just feel it. I just feel a lot of it has been not very well conceived, and some decisions feel like they've been rushed.
I think there's reactionary stuff. I don't doubt at the same time that Schuette leaving was probably actually a far more last minute than it was anticipated, which caused big rewrites and ways like how do we play with this in a sort of positive way and do something exciting with it. And I think that's why that last episode feels very jumbled in its last 20 minutes, where it doesn't seem to know where it's going so definitively. But sometimes, I mean, that's not a bad thing. I'm thinking like Blake 7, Series 3. The ending of Series 3 of Blake 7 has our starship heroes stranded on a planet, their main ship destroyed, and the main character smiles at the screen as he walks off. And that was meant to be the ending. That was it, as far as the cast were aware. And then allegedly, I think, in the after party or something, on the BBC announcement, I think it was on. And
it was aired, in the after
party, I don't know. It was when it was aired that it was coming back, and they were like, oh, we didn't realise this. And then obviously you get the final Series 4, which again, we've been told retrospectively, I think, by the late Chris Boucher, that was not meant to be the ending, that they were planning to do a follow-up from that. But that ends up being a very definitive ending when you don't have any follow-up. And I think sometimes having stuff like this, they're right. In a weird way, if you see Doctor Who as a container of the 21st century Doctor Who as a container, we know now that the Doctor can go on infinitely largely. We know that he borrows faces. We've seen it with Capaldi. And revisits faces, as we see with the Tom Baker curator. So having Billy Piper, you're right. In a sense, if they said there was no more, I think that's a very good ending in a weird way. I mean, if you have a choice of like the sort of Eric Sauer falling through infinite vortex, the Valiard and the Doctor grasped together ending, would you want that if that had been the ending? If JNT had been right and they'd actually done that, and the BBC had gone, well, feels like Doctor Who's closed now, a bit like Blake 7, let's put it aside now. Is that the ending that people would have wanted? I don't think so. But an ending, if you're going to fully end the show where he regenerates into someone else, and just to make it interesting to people, regenerates into someone that has meaning to the followers of that show, that's a damn cool ending. I think we know the story carries on, and there's a sort of acknowledgement to this annoying thread of Billy Piper, which has gone through most of the 21st century series. But I don't think it is, and this is what Jane Tranter says. The thing that Jane Tranter says, which is interesting to me, and again, maybe I've been a bit out of the loop on this, but she talks about there being 26 episodes, five of which haven't aired yet because that's the Land and Sea stuff.
Yeah.
And that sounds to me, and obviously this lends credence to some degree to some of the issues here, what she's trying to say there, that is actually part of the deal with Disney, that is part, there's a 26 allotment and those five are waiting to go out.
Yeah.
Which I think is interesting, because whenever I've seen it talked about, the Disney deal, it's always just talked about there being three seasons of the show. Two seasons. Every two seasons, there would be a renegotiation with Disney before moving on to that. So I wasn't quite aware that this was actually so integral. But as we've said in previous podcasts, clearly it is, because they've said that no decision's being made till after this is aired. And this explains in more clarity, because for some people it might have been obvious, but for me it wasn't, in clarity that is actually part of the issue here, that is part of the order or the agreement, should I say, of 26. And their way now, why that's being delayed continually, I don't quite get. And what's going on behind there. And that's obviously, but this is why there's this delay. And I think there is a reason, that is reasonable for her to sort of say at the moment. And I think that the reason there's no decision, because in this sort of thing where there is a sort of a partnership agreement of some form, there can be no decision until they've got to the point where the decision has been said it's going to be made. And that's not until there's the 26.
Yeah.
So I guess that's a good thing. I suppose the bad thing is we still don't know why this story is taking so long. And I suppose the other bad thing is that, I suppose to me, I'm not 100% sure how it's going to sweeten a deal, in a sense of, like, apart from the fact that they said they would do 26, if that was the agreement, two series, 26 episodes in total, because it's just so weirdly tangential.
Yeah. It's something that feels like a retread of things that we've already had, and it doesn't feel... I mean, the title, The War Between the Land and the Sea, I mean, it maybe has. Sort of,
I wonder, and again, this is pure speculation.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's stuff in this story which is that there's a sense is too sensitive to questions of land rights and ownership, which has been very much in the news, obviously, for the last couple of years. Or even, you know, whether there is a sort of like a sensitivity here. The BBC is kind of pushing back because it's sort of maybe the stuff in there which isn't written to be a direct acknowledgement of any of that sort of stuff, but might be construed as, and that could be a reason in my head why it's being pushed back.
Okay.
Because it does feel like the BBC is very sensitive around some of these international topics. And maybe this feels like it's a commentary on those topics, even though it's not meant to be, or maybe it is, I don't know. That maybe that's why it's being a bit.
I mean, if that is the case, and, you know, I entirely agree with you, it certainly could be, then the whole notion of writing something that could be seen as an allegory to something that kind of, certainly in our lifetimes, has been an issue, say, every 5 or 6 years. That seems really stupid to me, to actually go to the effort to write something allegorical or that could be seen as such about something that has the potential of blowing up at any moment.
I could be totally wrong, but I can't.
Yeah. No, I can totally see why you might think that. I it hadn't occurred to me, but I mean,
because I've not seen anything really on the BBC. I haven't seen anything on the BBC really, or anything in fiction generally so far, given this is now, I mean, obviously the questions that we're talking about have been going on for a lot longer, but I've not seen anything of late dramatically which even touches on that. And yet I see stuff like, I mean, Slow Horses at the moment has been doing stuff around immigration, about left and the right, with quite at the moment, its show at the moment, Slow Horses is kind of doing stuff around, feels a bit about Farage and Sadiq Khan, the London mayor, and Nigel Farage of the Reform Party. It feels like there's some very tight allegories there playing out, which doesn't surprise me. But I've not seen much around, as we say, some international stuff. So I just wondered whether that is something which is being the problem here, because I've not seen. It's just, I mean, when was it initially meant to come out? Because I thought it was meant to come out, like, not even like. I thought it was even meant to, I know people we talked about last October, but I thought it was even meant to be before that at some point.
I'm sure it was supposed to be before the last series, and then they said it was coming out after, sometime in the summer. Then it was supposed to be coming out, because I remember thinking, oh, they're putting out in the summer, so it's not going to be very good, because they're putting out, it's like when no one watches telly. Of course, no one watches telly nowadays, but that aside. Then it was going to be out around now, in the autumn, and now it's been pushed back to 2026. So...
But I mean, again, it could just be simply timetabling. It could be finding the right space for this sort of show, which I must admit, for the BBC, I don't know where I would put it.
Well,
I mean, is it BBC One? Well, this is what I mean. Is it again a sense that they don't know what to do with it? And it's nothing to do with politics at all. It's just they just don't know what to do with it.
Well, they could put it on BBC Three. That's a thing now again, isn't it? So it's...
But does that meet its demographic requirements? Is that where, do they just not know where it's going to land?
Well, there is that as well, isn't there?
I mean, Doctor Who's in that space. I mean, if Doctor Who wasn't traditionally a BBC flagship and it has been that global significance, you know, it was a brand new show, where the hell would they put that? I don't know. And so maybe this is again with this, they just don't know what to do with it. Or I don't know, who knows, but...
We don't know.
Yeah, from this.
We don't know. Let's go back to Jane Tranter. Let's just see what she said. She said, that's really, this going back to what Rob Shearman said, so wind back about 15 minutes. That's really rude, actually, and really untrue. The plans with Doctor Who are really simply this. The BBC and BBC Studios had a partnership with Disney Plus for 26 episodes. We are currently 21 episodes down into that 26-episode run. We have got another 5 episodes of The War Between the Land and the Sea to come. At some point after that, decisions will be made together with all of us about what the future of Doctor Who entails. Rob Sherman's comments, I'm pretty sure they're not rude. He might be inaccurate because he may not be in full control of the facts. He probably isn't because he's just a jobbing writer, but really rude?
Maybe they're just a bit...
near the knuckle?
One feels maybe that Bad Wolf is not, as we can probably guess, not the instigator of the delays. And maybe the people above the line are getting a little tired of the situation and then battling negative interpretations of the situation and then having to... I mean, I've not seen Jane trying to come out for much before.
No, she doesn't usually appear doing anything, really.
So for her to come out and... I mean, obviously the interview's longer than this, but obviously aware that this is something that she's going to come up, suggests to me is as if there is perhaps like a frustration about trying to keep, from their perspective, public assumptions fairly open-ended rather than negative. I mean, at the same time, some of her language there, while not final, is suggestive of things being different.
Yeah.
I mean, she sort of says later that, you know, this show's been going for 20 years in its current form. We cannot be surprised that things are going to change. So there is a sort of like, a suggestion of like, yeah, you guys are just going to have to get used to things being a little different from here. Well, what we've had before, maybe not the model that we're going to have moving forward.
Yeah.
So there is some stuff in there which is not necessarily meaning that she's sort of saying the Disney deal is done, it's not done, or it's failed, or won't go through. But I think there's a sense of like, however it goes through, maybe that model might shift a bit.
Yeah.
And maybe not. But if it does, don't be surprised, because as we've said for the last 2 years, certainly between the two of us, these are interesting times for media. And who knows where that sort of leaves everything.
Yeah. And it also ties in nicely with the podcast that we've had here on Patreon over the past few weeks and more recently serialized over on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and those places. So we're really keen to hear what you think about those as well, what the possibilities are for Doctor Who. We want to do another podcast in a few weeks' time with some of your opinions about, you know, the landscape of television and streaming and where Doctor Who sits in there. If it even does, there might be a completely different media future for Doctor Who. My personal feelings are it might be that it takes a sort of Midsummer Murders sort of approach. And that's like 3 episodes of 90 minutes a year or something like that.
What's about the short verticals, which are becoming a big thing in the States? I know this sounds a crazy thing, but... So, you know, there's these streaming libraries, which are now becoming sort of multi-billion pound assets, which Hollywood's starting to invest in, which are like... short, very cheap. So they're like, as far as I'm aware, because I've not watched any of them, they're sort of like often kind of like soapy melodramas, but really short episodes,
which
you'd watch on your phone and then you'd watch another one and they kind of hook you in into a role of them. So they come out very, very quickly.
How long are
they
not
done to a high cost? I believe so, yeah. That's kind of what we're looking at. We're looking at really short, digestible content, which has a sort of long tail to it where you just keep watching it. Right. And it's apparently doing very well. And now Hollywood's turning around and going, we want a bit of this. Okay. So they're sort of putting into place certainly in terms of like sort of how this works in terms of finances, in terms of actors, guilds and the like, unions. But I mean, I'm just thinking that, in a sense, you know, going back to the Radio Times, they're saying the Paul McGann, that every week for a little bit, there would be like a little news strip or with Lee Sullivan would draw.
That's right, yeah.
And that would be it. And, you know, a news strip is like, you know, 6 to 8 panels, if you're lucky, and then you'd move on. It's like, is there a space for Doctor Who to become like, almost like in a sort of more of a sort of detective space or sort of a more sort of thoughtful space, but in these short this short sort of distribution method. Because at the moment, as I say, at the moment, the way I've heard it described is kind of slop that's being, that you digest through this stuff. But could it be something where you could take that and make it into something which is like mini pockets, mini episodes, mini moments, which, you know, you could take. I mean, like, for instance, if you took like the people seem to love it. I don't mind it. I don't think it's his best stuff, to be honest. Capaldi's big speech in the Zygon Gambit one. If you sort of broke that down into like 6 to 7 or 6, 5 or 5, 5 little pocket things that you'd watch every day, I think that would almost work. You know, if you tailored it, obviously you wouldn't just take that scene and just cut it. But if it was tailored to that, you could have a very long speech. You could have, you know, things like courtroom dramas would work really well in those sort of spaces where you're doing the back and forths. I think there's a lot of space for that. I've been watching, which is in a weird way the opposite, but in the weird way very similar, I've been watching a lot of One Piece, which is the Japanese anime, which in the UK, BBC have the library on iPlayer, which I don't understand how that's happened, but apparently it's there. And I've been watching those. And again, that is like crack. You have these stories which are roughly about 17, 18 minutes long, so they're not like 2 minutes. But you're talking about a story going on for like 150 episodes in a weird way. Relatively speaking, you're doing the same thing. What happens in one episode in terms of the entire story? Fairly minor. Mm-hmm. You know, and we're not talking about like there's like multiple pockets of little storylines and chains and stuff. Yeah, there is, but it's like a bit like there'd be a big battle. And for 10 episodes or 20 episodes, it could be those two people sparring, occasionally going into flashbacks, or it's just a really clever way of stretching what would otherwise be a certain space. And this is compressing what would otherwise be a certain space. So yeah, I think there could be, for this sort of stuff, maybe there would be a place, and that would be a fairly economical thing to do as well, I imagine, in terms of costing. And that would bring something like Doctor Who. It could play more on its mystery rather than its action, or its thought rather than its running around. You still have a bit of that. But maybe there are, maybe we've just got to accept that the way forward is going to be different. If the new generations are not even really watching streaming to the way that we do, where else is it going to go?
Yeah. Okay. Well, food for thought there. And again, let us know what you think about that whole sort of thing, and we'll be reviving this topic for a future podcast. Missing episodes. I'm checking through our history of podcasts and discussions on missing episodes. Back in 2013, we had Fraser Hines and Deborah Watling talking to Gareth Kavanagh for the podcast. We had missing episodes aplenty in 2013, which was Doctor Who's 50th anniversary. We've had conversations about missing episodes several occasions since then. Back in 2012, when Galaxy Far and Underwater Menace were found, we've talked about artificial intelligence and Doctor Who missing episodes earlier this year. And now we have the missing episodes, Doctor Who the Missing Episodes podcast edition. Spoke to Film is Fabulous, which is a collection, which is a sort of it's a project. That's what I'm looking for, that collects, assesses and catalogues private film collections, and hopefully catalogue and preserve these collections. Unfortunately, because there are so many films in these collections, this is a very slow process, is cataloguing and preserving in particular. It's very much a kind of a very specific focused thing. So there are collections that aren't being preserved immediately. However, a film collector called John Franklin spoke to this podcast and related some sensitive information regarding a particular collector who had, and I quote, some very important material, including a missing episode of Doctor Who, although the episode name is not given. And now, this whole idea of private collectors owning missing episodes of Doctor Who has been around for a long time, hasn't it? Even, you know, going back to probably the 90s, at least. So this isn't an enormous surprise. But unfortunately, we don't really know anything much more than that, other than, I think it's probably the most high profile in terms of someone who's actually engaged with restoration and cataloguing and, oh, sorry, archiving and cataloguing and having direct contact with the person concerned. I think this is probably the biggest confirmation of this yet. James agrees.
Doesn't mean anything, does it, in the end?
Well, no, it doesn't mean anything.
It goes back to what you're saying. We've known since the 90s that there are private collectors who most likely hold some episodes, but this is verification that, yeah, hey, we're talking to one of those collectors who has a missing episode. So are they going to give it up? Well, they haven't before, so why are they going to do now?
Well, unless because they're in ill health for it. Is the argument.
But this is the point. I think the issue is here, and I think this is the fascinating thing, which I genuinely don't understand, is this like the Machiavellian Bond villain or whatever, who has like shrines of stuff just because there's a sense of power and being the only person who has the stuff. Yep. You know what we're talking about. We're talking about the large museum in the Elstree studio, which Bond is walked through with all these antiquities as the guy is showing off what he's, you know, what he's capable of, Mr. Bond, his reach, his power, which will eventually be submerged underwater in the final battle. You know, wherever it goes. Elstree, not Elstree. Which one would it be?
Pinewood?
Who? Pinewood. But anyway, point being, or is it like people who are like, well, this is actually a financial asset that if I need if I need money, or if my family needs money, you know, or if I pass on, there is something that has that could be useful. So is it about power? Is it about, I mean, obviously finance is power as well to some degree, but I don't understand. You know, I mean, if this person passes, I suppose there is a chance it could go down a generation to someone who does want to, or it could be that, you know, these people offer a good price and that person, who knows? But yeah.
As far as, I mean, I think I'm right in saying that these are donations, these films, or bequests.
Well, this is my point. I mean,
so if someone was going to buy something, it would have to go to another private collector. It can't be a public sale.
But this is it. I mean, if we've had these conversations since the 90s, a good chance a few of these people might have passed away by now. Well, not necessarily, but you'd think, but you don't hear of much actually coming out.
No, not in Doctor Who. I mean, I've been following Film is Fabulous and related projects on Facebook for some time. They've been mentioned on the podcast. And there's an awful lot of very interesting stuff pops up. Their aims are to, quote, preserving, quote, missing, rare and culturally important films. And there is a lot of really interesting stuff that pops up, but it is across the whole kind of landscape of television and British film going back decades. So it isn't, I mean, Doctor Who is only a tiny part of this. We talk about Doctor Who most weeks here, and you know, you're all here listening primarily for Doctor Who related material, but it's only a tiny portion of what's missing. So
yeah, and again, it's a weird thing, isn't it? Does it, because we've had so many either audio releases or animated versions of, in a weird way, what we get now is only, I don't know. I mean, obviously there's a lot of people who are completists, but to me it will almost be like just seeing that story through a different lens rather than seeing that story for the first time or experiencing that story for the first time. Mm. I mean, as always, there's ones I think we'd want more than others, maybe. Probably. I don't know. And then at the same time, are the ones that we want, would it be disappointing? You know, to actually have them in their full.
Well, I mean, look, Dalek Master Plan. There's no way Dalek Master Plan can be more disappointing than The Chase, is there? So,
I mean, is it? Would it be? I mean, Dalek Master Plan is, you know, it's a baller move for a little tiny low budget show to do a big story like that with lots of different. I mean, it's quite a big thing, and anything that's big like The Chase starts to show itself sort of unraveling at the seams. Mm. I mean, Marco Polo, like most people, I would be curious. I think he's the one I'm most curious about. Mm. having sort of watched the sort of animated and mixed version of things like Evil of the Daleks, I'm not, apart from the cultural curiosity, I can't imagine it will bring that much. Because I do think it's a bit of an overrated story in a lot of ways. I'm just trying to think what other ones I would be interested in seeing. And like I said, the ones that I'm, and again, I know the animated stuff isn't the same, but and some of them, like the Macro Terror, there's quite a good job at actually giving it a sense of scale, which I know that the original material does not have. And in a sense, might feel, I don't know whether I'd actually prefer the sort of animated Macro, just because it does what the script is trying to do, which the show invariably can't, and you've still got the same cast. So, I'd be very surprised if we see anything. There must be so few people. I think there's so few collectors with any of this Doctor Who stuff.
Yeah, I don't think we'll get I don't think we'll get full stories. It's just going to be episodes, I think. In the summer, the Daily Star reported that, and this followed some various talks from Filmers Fabulous and members, these missing episodes might include Dalek's Master Plan, The Traitors, which is very specific, Part 4 of The Tenth Planet, you all know what happens in that, Episode 3 of Web of Fear, and the Macro Terror. And private collectors are also said to have the complete Marco Polo. So,
but yeah. I mean, that's you know, what a lot of newspapers can do, because it gives a speculation and then makes the speculation seem more credible by giving names of those possible ones, but there's no evidence.
The first one has been sound more mentioned
as
before.
Soon as you say The Traitors.
Yeah, but that has been mentioned before, though, in previous years. But then again, they might just be mining their own archive of references there. But
then there's also the thing which is. Do you remember, I don't know what we've talked about on the podcast, but I remember a few weeks ago you sending me that video, which was that in-depth video on the last moments of The Tenth Planet and trying to work out what was missing, the gaps within those moments. In a weird way, I don't actually want to know the answer. I kind of like the analysis of it. The analysis is more interesting than what the answer would bring. So there's also that. In a weird way, Doctor Who's about mystery, and in a funny sort of, it's a sort of funny part of me which thinks having missing episodes is almost part of that mystery. It sort of gives the show a little bit of what it's all about. You know, we don't know for sure. And it's given so much creative spin-offs, you know, these animated materials, you know, the listening, it's purely audio. And I think it's sort of enriched the imagination. I must admit, as we've said before, when I saw Tomb of the Cybermen for the first time back in the 90s, I was really disappointed. Because I remember reading the Nostalgia in Doctor Who Monthly about how scary and claustrophobic this was. And then when I watched it, I was like, doors to the tomb are open the whole way through. You know, I thought they were actually properly sealed in there, which would be claustrophobic. No, they just wander out to the spaceship and back occasionally there and everywhere. It didn't feel like I imagined it would be. So I think in a weird way, you know, got to be careful what we wish for.
Okay, the next part of the podcast features myself and James McLean discussing AI slop and its continued impact on social media, other media that we consume, and how it might be finding its way into the things that we pay for to watch. For everyone else, it's the end of the podcast. So that's the end of this week's edition of Casterbus. As I said, if you can give us a review on Apple Podcasts, then we can increase our attention through that algorithm that Apple uses and get more listeners and more support through Patreon as well, hopefully. Remember, the Casterbus archive and early episodes with extra content are on Patreon. This went out first on Patreon. If you're watching this on Patreon today, hello. If you're watching this on Patreon last week, next week, in the future, whatever, hello again. And if you're listening to this, you could have had it early. That sounds like a threat, but it wasn't meant to be. We'll be back next time. Until then, it's goodbye from us.